you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Welcome to the Twilight Histories. You are about to pass into an alternate universe. To survive, you can't just be a tourist. You must become the people you explore. Today, you'll be visiting medieval Japan during the Kofan period in the 500s AD. You will join a priestess who is carrying a sacred relic believed to hold immense power. She believes it will bring peace to a land shattered by war, and soon her theory may be put to the test. Please put on your costume now while I continue your orientation. This show is entirely supported by our Patreon community and would not have happened without their generous support. When you join our Patreon community, you will get access to shows not available to the public, and you may even get your ideas produced into a Twilight History show. Please join us on Patreon by going to the website at twilighthistories.com, then follow the link. Well, you look great. The wormhole is opening. Now, step on the platform and let's get you on your way. This is Light of Eternity by Kevin Valpanese.
Wrath rules the skies. Its all-consuming darkness cast over the land as far as the eye can see. The underbelly of its storm-racked canopy undulating and smothering all below heaven with a relentless deluge. Trees whip about, smashed this way and that by the violent gales sweeping across the land. The very earth gurgles and chokes, drowning under the endless rain and collapsing into the torrents which now rage where once gentle streams trickled. This storm has raged for days now, and the sun has become a stranger to all who inhabit this ancient archipelago. All natural paths have been washed away, as have many homes. Only a few bridges remain standing, offering an ankle-deep crossing over the surging waters, and a few fortunate hilltops remain high above the water, though they instead suffer the ravages of the wind. It is across this forsaken landscape that you now tread, struggling against the current as you pull yourself out of a waist-deep stream and onto the muddy edge of a forest. You curse as your wet robes cling to you, icy cold to the touch, and certain to inflict you with pneumonia if you find no hearth or campfire shielded from the near-biblical rainfall. Taking huge, plodding steps across the mud, you find somewhat firmer footing among the exposed roots of cedar trees, and finding a natural depression among the tangled roots, you sink down and catch your breath. Your respite, however, is short. A pale hand wraps around your wrist and heaves you to your feet with considerable ease. You nearly trip over one of the winding roots, but another hand braces against your chest, keeping you upright. Glancing over, you lay your eyes on your weary guide through this waterlogged land. The priestess, Matsu. Drenched and shivering, Matsu looks like an onryo, her long hair dripping and hanging down over her face, and her skin white as snow, especially against the mud-stained robes which cling to her lithe frame. You can see exhaustion in her eyes, and perhaps sympathy, but those emotions are quickly replaced by determination as she leads you deeper into the forest as the sound of distant horses and shouting break through the tremendous thunder. Afforded some cover from the pounding rain, you instead have to contend with the mess of exposed roots and the steady incline in the direction you're headed. Getting to a higher elevation is risky, despite the poor visibility, but struggling against even ankle-deep water and loose soil is too much to bear for long. Following Matsu's lead, you use the trunks of trees to pull and push yourself forward, mindful not to trip or venture too close to the clearings in the forest, unsure of how deep the water really is. Whatever the way is, you place your faith in Matsu, following her as she traces some unseen route through the endless sea of cedar trees. Though she is a lifelong devotee of the sun goddess's rite, she has so far displayed instincts and grit more like that of a survivalist. Unafraid of haunting wilds, she's navigated perfectly, always finding refuge or some meager morsel to sustain your grueling trek. And, of course, she's always been one step ahead of those currently pursuing you, even if that step is but a mere hair's width. You wonder where this practitioner of the ethereal arts learned to brave the wilderness. What life did she have before committing her days to the shrine at Issei? It's all a mystery to you, for your time at that hallowed ground was short, and Matsu's conversations were even shorter. She offered little beyond her name and the odd request to assist her in the maintenance of that holy place. But as frustrating as her silence was, when she came to you on the first night of the storm, it only took one word to draw you out of your bed and into the rain-besieged night. But deep and intriguing of a mystery as Matsu is, the bundle she keeps slung under her arm has utterly consumed you. Though you escaped the enemy's arrival at the shrine by mere moments, Matsu devoted precious time to open a chamber you've never noticed in a hallway that you could only describe as unimpressive and neglected. Swaddling whatever it was in cloth, she rebuffed every query about its nature and has never offered a single glimpse of it. All you do know is that this object must be preserved, and that Matsu claims it must be carried to a safer place of rest. On one particularly cold night, huddled around a dying flame, Matsu did offer a few words on how precious it is to her. "To get this back, I would throw myself into the depths of Yomi, and I would go deeper than even Izanagi did for his great love." Your heart, filled with wonder at what the unseen object was, so beloved by this young woman, but you dared not risk a single glimpse of it at all. Or you could also sense a righteous fury at any who might attempt to lay a hand upon the thing. And you were grateful that she even took you out before the enemy breached the shrine. But you have no doubt she would snap your neck if you ever dared reach for the object. Moments later, you finally reach an incline. A hill with a set of large stone steps leading upward, not unlike those which granted access to the shrine at Issei. Water cascades down the stones, and the wind batters the Ichinotori, the gate, which stands atop the hill. Matsu leaps up and over the first few steps, nearly scuttling her landing as the rushing waters surge and spray over the steps. You heave yourself up from the muddy ground and begin a slower ascent, eventually joining Matsu at the top. Bracing yourself against the round column of the gate, you feel the years of weathering and fragmentation made worse by the endless rain. The wood is slowly being eaten away, disintegrating in several places. Wherever this is, you feel it has not felt the tender care of human hands in a long time. A glance down the sando confirms your suspicions. That you can even see anything in the distance is a miracle, given the hostile atmosphere and the preponderance of overgrown trees and their twisting branches which lay fallen or hanging along the path. Further along still, you see the remains of a collapsed gate, rotting as it sinks into the waterlogged earth. And yet further, you see what you fear is the end of your journey. There is no temple here, girded by the sacred tamagaki. Instead, there is a humble cabin, overgrown with moss and vines. Its door apparently nailed in place, shielded from the rain by an aged roof. The place looks like the residence of some old crone, perhaps a witch secluded here in the dark heart of the forest, tending to the misshapen and withered garden which surrounds the cabin in place of sturdy fencing. You pray this is merely a temporary refuge. But as you watch Matsu's shoulders drop and her head crane back as she exhales, you recognize the relief of someone at journey's end. Matsu sets off in an instant, running down the path, vaulting over fallen trunks and debris, leaving you trailing as you clamber over the same obstacles. She gets about halfway down the approach to the cabin before coming to a firm halt, sending water and mud flying in every direction. She tenses up, squats down, and gazes straight ahead, peering out from behind a fallen tree. As you catch up to her, Matsu seizes you by the wrist and pulls you down to a crouching position. You are about to demand an explanation, but she raises a finger to her lips and then points ahead. Straining your eyes, you attempt to see past the torrential downpour and the vegetation obstructing your view. And while you can barely make out anything at first, a flash of movement quickly alarms you. Matsu grabs you by the arm and leads you in a creeping advance around the debris and into the more heavily wooded parts of the path. Though your pace is sluggish and your muscles ache from the squat position you're forced to take, you are afforded a better view of the danger ahead. Three soldiers congregate near the cabin, two on foot and one mounted, all of them armed with sabers. As lightning flashes in the sky above, it causes the plate armor worn by the warriors to glimmer, especially the conical helmets they wear, which you fancy would make for a fantastic lightning rod. But the odd flash of red escapes from between the armor plating, revealing baggy, soaked trousers and shirts. Even the one horse is adorned in the manner of its rider, with considerable armor of its own and red trim around the edge of each major segment. You had not seen your enemy since you fled the temple, thanks to Matsu's relentless pace and knowledge of the wilderness. But now that you can see them somewhat clearly, you can see that they are not natives of this archipelago. To begin with, the manner in which they protect their steed is alien to what you've seen so far, and the general outline of the indigenous armor is much rounder and wider. You can't quite place where they're from, but they certainly cut an imposing figure regardless, especially to you and Matsu, unarmed as you are. "They are from the kingdom of Pekche," says Matsu, "and if I am right, then they bring disaster with them." "How do you know?" you ask, trying to keep your voice low. "I am from Pekche." But before you can pry anything else from Matsu, she begins her creeping advance anew, slipping between trees and crawling along her belly in the mud as she inches closer to the enemy. You follow her, wondering what she intends to do. The soldiers look content to remain in place, scanning the landscape, but mercifully missing you at every pass. Your position is well hidden enough, but you doubt it's so advantageous as to grant you victory should you attempt to ambush the enemy. Then, your position worsens as the mounted soldier orders his footmen to begin searching the area. Visibility is poor, but at this distance, you're bound to be discovered eventually. And yet, Matsu seems ready to leap from cover, her hands drawing the mysterious bundle close to her chest. You reach out and try to stop her, but in a flash, she leaps out from behind a tree and lands in the middle of the path. In an instant, All three soldiers lock their eyes on her, and the mounted officer readies his saber, charging Matsu immediately. She, for her part, quickly undoes the bundle, letting the filthy cloth slip away to expose a round, ornate gem set into intricate metalwork. Closing her eyes, Matsu lifts up the sphere and holds it out before the oncoming soldiers. Up above, the storm rages, lightning arcing across the sky. The clouds appear to thicken, blotting out all but those violent displays of Raijin's melodious rage. But another light rises to puncture the enveloping darkness. The orb, cradled in Matsu's hands, begins to glow, its light immediately producing a warmth and blinding radiance. The light grows so intense that you fear Matsu might be incinerated, but instead, you find yourself launched skyward as the orb unleashes a blast of intense light. You twirl through the air, your eyes offering nothing but searing white. As you crash to the ground, you can feel an intense heat and the curious cessation of the rain falling on your skin. Even the ground suddenly feels dry, and the foliage crisp as you run your fingers back and forth in an effort to place yourself. You hear the neighing of a distressed horse, and footsteps fast approaching. You roll around, fearing what may come next. But as a firm yet delicate hand touches your face, your worries evaporate. Not a second later, the veil of opaque whiteness withdraws from your eyes, and you find yourself looking up at Matsu, who is practically glowing, though her grimace betrays her severe exhaustion. She helps you to your feet and leads you out onto the main path, just as the rain descends back upon the earth in full force. As you look around, you can see the soldiers from Pekche laying on the ground, their eyes covered in cataracts, and their armor sizzling as raindrops crash against it. And then you remark upon the ground, which is seared in a pattern resembling the rays of the sun, all centered around where Matsu was standing with the glowing orb. "What happened?" you ask. Matsu cradles the orb, which is now dark and dull. "What is that thing?" You extend a questioning finger toward the orb, but she brushes you off firmly, preventing any further attempt with a gaze like that of a starving tiger. Matsu conceals the orb within the folds of her robe and gestures for you to follow her. You walk past the soldiers who groan in agony and roll about with little hope of surviving the night. Stooping down for a moment, you touch the armor of one of the soldiers and indeed find it scorching hot and still producing steam as the rain strikes it. "Hurry," yells Matsu. You immediately stand back up and follow after her, passing through the withered garden and under the doorway of the cabin. As Matsu begins to pry the door open, you glance back once more at the fallen soldiers and meet the unknowing gaze of one, cold and milky eyes looking in vain for help. The orb's power is fearsome, but you too gazed upon it as it unleashed its radiant blast. And yet, sight has not been torn from your eyes. And what of Matsu, who stood at the center of the blast and came out tired and yet radiant? You pray, perhaps, that you will have answers soon, as Matsu forces the door to the cabin open and steps inside, illuminating the shadowy quarters with her brilliance. Stepping inside, you feel as if you pass through a veil, the very pressure of the air changing. And as you turn to close the door on the storm-racked world beyond, you feel as if you might never set your eyes on it again. The interior of the cabin is half what you expected. a dust-caked and mold-ridden mess long abandoned by whoever dwelt there. But to say that this was the hideaway of some crone or witch would be a grave error. No, this place, despite the modest impression it offers from the outside, is almost palatial on the inside. You stand there, the interior illuminated by the otherworldly incandescence still clinging to Matsu, and in the dim glow, you can see that this place may well have lodged a royal in its heyday. Fine silks lay scattered across the wooden floor, dull and wrinkled, but otherwise untouched by the ravages of time. The walls are decorated with simple bas-reliefs, carved in wood, depicting the undulating forms of clouds and the strong, linear rays of the sun which shine down upon a mountainous landscape. Here and there, ornate wooden chests embellished with cloud-like flourishes rest against the walls, some overturned, their drawers lying empty on the floor. But above all, the neglected things silently enduring their abandonment. The object at the back of the room remains proud and, instantly, captivating. Its glimmer catches your eye, reflecting the now dimming glow emitted from Matsu. You find yourself drawn forward, pushing past the radiant priestess until you stand before the altar and the mirror it holds. The altar is unlike anything you've seen since setting foot on the island. Unlike the small idols and figurines which decorate the homes of the wealthy here, rendered in a round and simplistic manner, this altar is composed of two wooden figures carved in a fashion far surpassing anything wrought by the hand of Phidias. Two male figures support the actual altar, each swaddled in flowing robes, ballooning from the blast of a timeless gale. Their faces, bearing mirthful gazes framed by wispy mustaches and beards, which likewise catch the wind. The central feature of the altar is a large mirror, framed in tarnished bronze, depicting rays of sunlight like those carved into the walls, and between those rays run the fluid and spiraling tongues of flame birthed by our mother star. The surface of the mirror itself is polished to perfection, and is unmarred by even a single speck of dust. You stand before the reflective surface, completely transfixed by the aura of this ancient relic. Matsu pushes you aside, shattering the spell which held you in place. She looks at the mirror, seeing her own luminous and exhausted expression staring back at her. She turns her eyes away, casting her gaze down to the floor for a long beat. But in time, she looks up again, and this time, with the flame of determination burning in her eyes. Turning back, she rushes to the cabin door and pulls down a latch, securing the only way in or out. Then, she pulls the orb from her robe and holds it up, finding it barely able to hold a flickering light worthy of a candle. Standing as close as you are now, you can get a good look at the thing. The sphere is made of some orange mineral, perhaps sunstone, but its core appears to be fluid, shifting as the light it emits flickers. The orb was obviously embellished by human hands, given the metal arcs which wind around its surface, betraying tongues of flame. You wonder if this remarkable object is a depiction of the sun, and if the craftsman who labored over it was aware of its remarkable power. What is it? You ask, now transfixed by the orb. A gift left behind by the most sublime of all the kami, Amaterasu. Her light sustains the world throughout the day, and even at night, her glow is reflected off the moon, Tsukuyomi. But there are dark days like these when her light cannot reach us from above. Matsu holds the orb up, giving you a good look at the shifting structure within and the faint arcs of light which swirl around the glowing core. This sphere is her promise to always give us a guiding light and a way to call the Kami herself. Matsu points to the mirror and then holds up the orb in front of it, immediately causing the light within to glow brighter, though not with the intensity it did outside. And looking at the mirror, the reflection of the orb appears to glow even brighter still. Why have we brought this here? What's so special about this place? There are certain times of the year when the sun disappears from the sky completely. On those days, the Kami retreats to her private rooms to rest. This is one of those private rooms. No one can enter while the Kami is here. But when she is gone, we can visit and send a message to her, asking for her assistance. So you think you can call the goddess and repel the armies that are invading right now? Is that it?
I think that if Amaterasu can break the storm's hold, then the Yamato or the other great houses can at least force a peace.
Matsu returns to the altar, and offering up the orb, she releases her grip on it. The orb does not drop to the ground, but instead, it floats, gaining in brightness as it emanates its rays, and feels the warmth of its brighter reflection. Matsu drops to her knees and stretches her arms out, supplicant before the orb in the mirror.
Now, please, I must focus. You must hold the door shut. Soldiers will have seen the light from before, and they will come in greater numbers.
Nodding, you check the door and find it firm. But, unarmed as you are, you wonder what good you can do against any serious assault. Perhaps the orb's power could be channeled again to blind the attackers, but that won't do you any good if the cabin is surrounded while you're still inside. And you do recall being blown around like a leaf in an autumn gust. And this time, you might be splattered against the walls. Hopefully, the Kami will offer some protection, if that is something Matsu can ask for. The fate of the Isles is one thing, but you'd like to keep your head as well. Thinking quickly, you decide that bracing the door might be the best thing to do. You seize the fallen drawers and lay them against the door, prodding them up and against the latch. At best, you've bought yourself a few moments should the cabin come under attack. But that done, you once again find yourself standing there in awkward silence as Matsu communes with the floating orb and whoever might be behind that captivating mirror. You see that Matsu is shivering. Her hair is soaked with sweat, draped over her shoulders like a thousand slithering serpents. Not wanting to disturb her, but fearing that she may collapse in the effort, you pick up one of the silk robes from the floor and drape it over her shoulders. You decide to pick up a few more and wrap them around her body. As you do, your hand accidentally brushes against the back of her neck, and you feel that her skin is indeed icy cold. And now that you're looking, you see that the glow which clung to her body before has all but vanished, instead leaving her quite pale.
Arigato gozaimasu,
says Matsu. She doesn't look back, but you can feel her gratitude nonetheless. She sits up, steadying herself as she kneels before the orb, the light of which is growing more intense with every passing second, causing the mirror to give forth so much light that you might mistake it for the sun breaking over the horizon. The warmth of that light is invigorating, and it begins to fill a room. Whatever Matsu is doing, it appears to be working. But the rumble of thunder and the pattering of rain on the cabin roof assures you that the storm is far from breaking. And worse, its throes seem to grow more violent. The booming of thunder sounds closer than before, and the rain beats down harder. Perhaps, you think, the celestial powers are engaged in some great contest, with shining Amaterasu surging forth to break her tempestuous brother Susanoo's grasp over the skies. If it is so, the battle must be fierce as the storm's wrath intensifies, with the wind slamming into the cabin's sides, shaking the entire structure and dislodging dust and debris from its ceiling. The door rattles as the violent kaze butt against it, causing your haphazard pile of furniture to collapse. Rushing over, you attempt to rebuild the heap and better brace the door against the power of the storm. The door rattles so violently that you think the latch will explode into a million splinters. The cabin shakes and groans as the deluge outside becomes even heavier, and what sounds like hailstones crash against the roof. You fear that any moment now, the storm god himself will kick the door down and hurl you skyward. "It seems mighty Susanoo has come home," Matsu says, still struggling to remain upright as she gives herself over to the power of the orb. "The stories say that after he was cast out from heaven, he wandered in the western lands and fathered their first line of kings." She laughs, her body racked with convulsions as she does. "And just like I did, the Kami's sons have arrived on these shores." You rush over and embrace Matsu, trying to keep her upright, but her body feels heavy and frigid to the touch. "I came here because it was my father's home. And I suppose the armies of Pekje feel the same way." "Why do all this? Matsu, this might kill you at this rate." As you utter those words, the orb once again finds its blinding glow, and you have to shield your eyes from it and from the oppressive heat it radiates. "If this isn't your home, then why bother? Leave this to those gods, or the kings of these lands." "I'm doing this because I won't see these islands divided and ravaged as my home was. We, in the western lands, are a people divided. Many kings fight for control of the western shores. Shila, Kaya, Kokoryo, and Pekje." Matsu falls forward, collapsing from the stress. As she does, the orb wavers, and its light begins to dim. You try to help her up, but she brushes you off, pushing herself back up to a kneeling position, brushing the hair away from her face. "I want us all to be one people under the warmth of the sun. But this is not the way. I will not have it done at the tip of a spear." And just as Matsu speaks that final word, you hear wood splintering. Turning back, you see an arrowhead sticking out of the door, and shortly, it's joined by another, and another. And then a spear bursts through the roof, lodging itself in the ceiling. Over the roaring thunder and the howling winds, you hear the sloshing of dozens of feet advancing on the cabin. More arrows and spears pierce the cabin, letting in the rain, which immediately evaporates in the heat, filling the cabin with steam. You're trapped in a sauna that's quickly becoming an oven, but you dare not open the door. Someone is very keen to get in, however. In fact, it's several people, all hurling armored shoulders against the door in an attempt to break it down. You have no doubt they will be through shortly, especially as your little barricade comes tumbling down once again. But then, you feel a warmth, quite distinct from the growing inferno you were just standing in. Your body feels light, even weightless. And though the room becomes impossibly bright, you can somehow still see. Turning back, you find Matsu standing upright,
her arms still outstretched, but lowering as she looks upon the orb and the wall of pure light that it floats into. The entire back half of the cabin is bathed in the soothing radiance, and its very presence seems to calm the storm outside. Matsu turns to you, at first looking utterly spent, and yet her eyes wide, beaming, a broad smile written across her face. Warmth returns to her skin, and her robes are cleansed of the filth you'd so recently waded through. She looks restored, sublime, and serene. You might even say she looks divine. But then, over her shoulder, where the mirror once stood, you think you can make out the outline of another woman. This faint figure seems to be wearing long, flowing robes and has even longer hair, which ebbs and flows like gentle waves on Kyushu's tranquil shores. And though you cannot quite make out her face, this figure fills you with peace and tranquility. You reach out to this apparition as it draws near, bringing its all-consuming light with it. And then, in a flash, the world seems to fall away, and you feel yourself carried off by gentle hands, drifting in a sea of light. You see Matsu gliding above you, her hands folded against her heart in relief. You wave to her, she nods to you, and then you give yourself over to the Kami's presence as everything goes white.
That was Light of Eternity by Kevin Valbenesi. The Twilight Histories is supported by our Patreon community. When you join us on Patreon, you will get access to shows not available to the public, and you may even get your ideas produced into a Twilight History show. Please join us on Patreon by going to the website at twilighthistories.com and follow the link. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.